prophecies are projected out of consciousness. Correction of prophecies are brought about by conscience. We can prophesy of the doom of the world, but by virtue of our conscience, if we can find 10 right-thinking men, right-thinking men or righteous men, men on the right track between conscience and consciousness, who know the difference between consciousness and conscience, how it works. If we can find 10 of them, who knows the difference between these two forces of consciousness and conscience, that could make it possible for the action to alter the predestination that is set up by the prophecy.
In order to act on your intuition, your conscious should act on the consciousness and not your consciousness acting on the conscious.
Your conscience has to be acted upon.
Acted from, yes.
Alright. Therefore, once your conscience is acted on, you're not going to be freed from responsibility. You're going to be freed for responsibility. Your conscience is going to give you the freedom for responsibility. It's not going to give you freedom from responsibility. Only consciousness will try to trick you that you're going to be free from responsibility. But your conscience will show you in the final summation, you will be freed for responsibility. Responsibility. And that's a vast difference and a much more powerful type of freedom. When you can be free for responsibility, then you are your brother's keeper. But not until that time, you cannot be. Conscience and consciousness will be in a tug of war state. Yes? Yes, these individuals have finally come to the confrontation between their conscience and their consciousness. It's by their affirmation or by their declaration you can see how they have probed into their being to discover the dualistic pull of consciousness and conscience, and allowing them now to stand firm with their conscience and not be swayed by their consciousness. Scriptural truth can be lived, but can be very painful in the process. It's like a caterpillar trying to become a butterfly. The painful period is in the chrysalis stage, the cocoon stage.
Transition.
And transition in the human body is going from consciousness to conscience to survive. It's one of the hardest things to do.
The alteration, see, when you're talking about changing a prophecy, it says righteous, if you can get 10 righteous thinking men, see, that mental pattern has to be changed. It's learning a lesson that's trying to be taught to you. If you can change it up here and then change your way of living, you don't have to go through the suffering.
Uh-huh.
The prediction is there that this will come.
You have an energy requirement in your karma, but there's different ways to equalize this energy.
That's right. You have to make payments in every realm, physical, emotional, mental, causal. But if you change your thinking pattern, you're going to change your emotional reactions and your physical actions. See?
And therefore you...
And therefore, all of this can be compensated for the corrections made that are necessary for things to proceed properly. But if you don't change these other things, then it's going to come to a physical catastrophe in order to force these changes. But they don't have to be.
So the resistance involved.
So you see, you're not altering the destiny. The ultimate destiny is using these things in the proper way.
It's the path that it's gotten to, that can be changed.
It's just sort of like you start going down a wrong road and you realize it and you reverse and turn around and go back to the right road. You change your pattern. The thing is to get to the goal. Mm. That is the true destiny. That is the true fate.
That's the predetermined destiny.
Yes.
That's what's predetermined.
And we have certain things that are going to come about. If you continue on down this other road, somebody can tell you, you keep on down that road, you're going to have problems. You're not going to get where you're supposed to go.
Well, physically, you can, like you say, back up and turn around. Now, consciously, we can do this in our patterns.
Yes. When you make the adjustments, if your primary error is in your mental thinking, you change that. See, and this is where our primary errors have been. Then we can begin to alter in the emotional and the physical. It's not that you're changing your fate karma. All our karma, this is, I think, where you're wondering about how, what you said a while ago, when you asked about your destiny.
Well, I understand the karma.
The destiny is to get to the goal. That is the essential destiny.
Well, see, what there's two things that you're speaking of. One is like the karma that is this adjustment that has to be made for things done in the past, or, you know, our present, and also, but the specific events that are necessary to discharge this or to work out this karma, which I have been, through some sources, been led to believe it's just a matter of an energy adjustment. Such and such was done, therefore, reaction, totally and impersonally and completely just, under the Lord of creation, a principle, just an action-reaction. But that when you're, like, if this transferred by initiation, I'm told, to the consciousness acting on this adjustment by the master, then the path of discharge, so to speak, can be changed.
That's love coming in. Haven't you seen that just all over everything?
In other words, if you're uptight and can't get out of it, the mere fact that some other human being would suggest to you that you transfer the load to them, this gives you release. Anytime we can seem to shift the sense of burden from the conscience within ourselves to the conscience of another being apart from ourselves, we seem to gain release. It is not necessary by shifting, actually something has occurred, because you have no evidence that there actually have been any shift. But because you assume and you take into consideration that you are shifting the burden, this modification of the pressure can start a release in you. You are in yourself bringing about your own relief valve. You're using the conscience working within another person as a mere reference point to give relief to your own conscience than you, you cannot normally do.
But this reference point must be more stable or higher.
It is something to which you must have respect for. The respect is because it holds to its true point of center. Therefore, you in turn would use it as a reference point. you have made it the pole star. Now, does the pole star move away from the pole in order to guide you when you fly at night? You are flying your plane.
It's considered a fixed star.
You consider it a fixed star. Therefore, by virtue of your consideration, you make your calculations to move.
Hmm.
But the pole star is inconsiderate or unimportant or is uninterested as much as how much you relate, because it's already there. You are the one who must make the adjustments for it. It's there and it's going to remain there in virtue of your relationship. It's in your conscience you have to make this relationship. So when you say, I have made you the pole star of my life, though my seas are dark and all my stars are gone, I still see the path through thy mercy. Because the pole star is fixed and mercy is already radiating to us from any level. And if we accept it as a fixed condition, we would align ourselves to that state and become fixed. Therefore, we would get released. We must take some ideal as the reference point of shifting the pressure within us to give us release.
One must be sure to pick a good reference point.
The goodness of the reference point is determined upon your understanding of its behavior.
Ah.
Otherwise, you do not understand what it represents to you. Therefore, it would neither good nor bad. But when you understand its behavior, then it has its goodness.
Right.
So your choice is determined by understanding of the behavior of the fixed principle. It's like what is called a stable mechanics.
Yes.
It's just as much as your left eye will be in the left side of your face, and the nerve running down from that would be on the left foot. That's fixed and stable and specific. It's just like a herb having a certain mineral for a certain organ in the body. That's fixed and stable. It'll go and affect that organ. Equally true in your conscience, when you have that kind of an understanding of the stableness of it, then you will have that type of relationship to it. But until that understanding is achieved in your conscience, you can't have a stableness. It will always flip back and forth. Practical form of breathing while you're playing will be your complete breath. It's so diaphragm and the head and top for a few seconds. It
this. And if you practice the watching the breath, this will calm the mind in order to concentrate. See, watching the breath coming in and going out. You can really close your eyes and observe yourself breathing as it comes in and go out. And this is the oldest technique in the world. It's, they call it the technique that Buddha used to gain realization by observing your breath coming in and going out. Now, you want to try it? And the way you can keep check of yourself, as it comes in, you close the finger in. When you get the urge to breathe out, open it up. When you get the urge to breathe in, pull the finger back in. It's based on the urge. It's not based upon that you should force yourself to keep out or you should force yourself to pull.
It's no longer magic. It's verified right here in the lab, right in your big medical research lab. It has a new name. The yogis used to do it, but because they don't want to associate the research with yoga, they call it biofeedback. It's a nice name for how to direct your mind on your own life energy so that you can rise above pain. But whatever level we call it, it behooves us to understand the mechanics of it and help ourselves. We have been educated that a pain is something that we can't like. When we educate ourselves that a pain is something we can like, then the pain corrects itself because it will go back to its source and offset the impulse and correct itself. And pain appears in many forms, and it has an unusual ability, and that is, it can hide. It knows how to hide in the human body. It's an amazing thing what it can do. You can follow pain along a certain area of your body, and all of a sudden it will disappear from the body. And you will think that you have removed it from your system, yet it will appear in another area of the body and affect you. Unless we can understand pain, face it, and work with it, we cannot draw down more life energy. That's why your master, great teacher Jesus, said, he who loses life for my sake will have it back. Losing your life for the divine sake is getting involved with the pain cycles, understanding what it's all about, so that you don't fear it, and you can draw more life out of that involvement with it. Pain is a threat to life. Fear would maintain that pain to threaten that life. The lack of fear of the pain would give you the strength to draw on life, and therefore pain no longer threatens your life. The more you fear pain, the more it threatens your life. The least you fear it, the more control you have over it, the longer the life is. Now, most of us walk through life feeling very healthy. We can touch ourselves all over and say, we don't feel no pain, we're healthy, pretty good people, we walk along the road, look good. To prove that you're unhealthy, press around the sole of your foot. And you'll find out you've got lots of aches and pains in there that you didn't know were there. And then you really realize that you ain't so healthy, because the pain is hiding there underneath your foot. And you walk, and don't even know the pain is there, because nature has hid. The pain hides under the feet. When you can trace it, then you can correct it. By virtue of
the mechanics of the body, we die from our feet up. We don't die from our head down. The brain is too smart to let it die before every other part of the body. The brain will never die first before the human body system. Every other part of the body will die first before the brain. Because that's the controller, that's the governing force. A tree is like a human body. Its roots are in the ground. But the roots don't die first. The branches and the leaves die first, then eventually the roots. The human body is like a tree. The roots are in the head, where it draws its sustenance from the ether, the prana, the light tonic energy in the atmosphere, and distributes itself through the nerves right down into the feet. And if it's going to die or wither or shut off itself, it will begin in the feet first. By virtue of this principle, if we die from our feet first, then we can live from our feet first. Wherever death is, life is. Paul put it another way. I live and die daily in the Lord. I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in the Lord. He knew the process of life and death, how it went on in his body. Master Jesus knew it when he said, no man take my life from me. I have the power to lay it down, I have the power to pick it up. How many can say that on a conscious level, that they can consciously move the life energy through their body with their real power? In other words, Jesus was a super biofeedback therapist. When you come to think of it, he knew biofeedback fantastically, the art of manipulating it by his mind. And until you understand what it's all about, that the whole spiritual life is conservation of energy, there are no miracles. The energy is conserved and raised to its highest magnetic impulse, and coming in contact with those who have a lower negative charge, like a battery, run down. Then a contact is made and they're charged up, they're lifted up, the energy is raised up. The more you are centered in your consciousness, the more the body will draw the energy and raise itself up. Now the mind will fear and will not want to venture out away from its own environment. But when it does not venture out, it will atrophy. When it begins to venture out, that's where you get the statement, nothing ventured, nothing gained. You can only gain when you venture out, when you face something. So the fear of pain leads to evasion, leads to breaking down the body. The understanding of pain leads to the control of life in the body. Doctors are becoming more and more aware of this in their researches, that they can control pain. The latest researches in pain control, and I've seen it, I've had the opportunity to see it by the leading research doctor in the field. Spent a couple of hours with it, talking with it. They make an implant just above your pain area with certain electrodes, and they give you your little walkie-talkie battery equipment that you can tune up and shut off the pain when it comes up. If you have a pain in the lower spine, they'll make an implant above it, just 1 inch above the spine, into the spine. These electrodes will go in there, and you have your squawk box, just like your hearing aids. And all the time, the volume of the electrical stimuli, it's just a pain of. The only problem is this, you can't go to sleep at all. Because when you go to sleep, you've got to keep it on. Or is the pain coming back? See? It's just like your hearing aid. You have to have the battery on in order to hear. You have to have the battery on to sleep with the pain condition. And this is as far as we've got in mechanical control of pain. More and more we're trying to shut it out. And less we're trying to understand it and rise above it by the virtue of the will. Eventually we become very, very weak and with individuals without any willpower. Willpower is necessary to survive. It's not egotism. It's a big difference between willpower and egotism. Volitional control is necessary to survive in our environment. We're going to be challenged, and we have to exercise our volition. And the only way we can exercise our volition, we have to understand it. We have to understand how it works in our bodies. Our willpower, at the time of birth, is called automatic volition. It's automatic because it goes on by itself. At the time of birth, when the doctor taps the body of the baby and forces it to breathe and make it respond by crying, the lungs automatically open and take on the oxygen. This is automatic volition, automatic will. There is no part of consciousness playing in that. There is no responsibility taken into consideration. This is simply going on automatically. Now, for the first 7 years, we live in unthinking will. We cannot think for ourselves. Our peers have to think for us. By virtue of that, the Catholic Church used to say, give me the child from 1 to 7, you can have him back and he never leave us. All the imprinting is done in the brain from 1 to 7. The volitional control is set up. That's unthinking will. Unthinking volition, it cannot respond on its own. From 7 to 21, we have blind will. That is the erratic control and actions of the youth and the juvenile, the teenager. Blind because it does not know to differentiate between reason, logic, and intuition. It cannot compute for itself practically. Now, that is the blind will level. From 21 to 35, it begins to develop thinking will. Because a couple of hard knocks in society, and then the rules of the game to live comes in. And we wake up pretty fast that you just don't take your neighbor's merchandise without paying for it. Or you don't smash it to his barnyard without being liable. People begin to react to each other on an adult level. Then you're forced to think. You don't like the rules of the game, but that's the way the game goes. Now you're catching up with the law of action, which is called karma. Then we have thinking will. Thinking will, we continue to live from 21 to 35 and from 35 till we die in the thinking will stage by learning through trial and error. Rarely, very rarely, do we develop the last stage of our willpower. That is dynamic will or obedience to God's will. This is already development, dynamic will or obedience to God's will. All the scriptures tell us His will be done. Well, we don't want that because this is giving up our personality. This is giving up our sense of identity and ego, making us scapegoats for the actions around us that are precept to dominate and discipline us. But when we develop dynamic will, we are free. We are not free from society and its implications. We are free for society and all its implications for the first time. This is the real freedom. This is the real salvation of man. When you are free for your fellow man, not free from him, free for him. You can only gain this freedom by developing the dynamic will. The dynamic will can easily be recognized. You are at the right place, and it's the right time, and the experience that you're experiencing is the right experience. It's neither good nor bad. It's an opportunity to test your love. And that's dynamic will. Dynamic will puts you in the present tense, not in the future or in the past. You don't live in the future and you don't live in the past. Dynamic will makes you live now. It makes you accept where you are right now. It makes you accept the time factor of your existence now. It makes you accept the responsibility and the mutual relationship of yourself now. The experience that you encounter is neither good nor bad. It's a state of equanimity to test your love. You can't test your love if you don't have a trial. You don't know how much you really love. You don't know the weaknesses of your love. You don't know what extent the will can take the harassment to bring out love from within you until you are tested. It may seem that God is playing a dirty trick on mankind, but he's not. He cannot bring out his true nature within us unless he tests the mechanism to bring it out. He, being pure love, must test the mechanism by love, with trying circumstances in a dynamic way for us to release it. Therefore, dynamic will is God's will. And God's will is obedience. That means surrender to the forces around you without question and live through it in a state of equanimity. Now, when we graduate from that level, then we are performing the true action of living. The masters or the saints all tell us God realization from their level is to do the will of the Lord. All their coercion, admonitions, and disciplines point out, thy will be done, not my will. Father, remove this cup. Nevertheless, thy will be done, not my will. He too had to get it out of the way. He had to let go of his personality, his ego, and accept the projected action. He that do the will of the Lord is my brother and my sister. He that followeth in my word is my disciple. Obedience all the way through. No matter how you look at it, if your will is going to be dynamic in order to rise above pain, to control life on your own conscious level as a human being, and realize the truth that you are so, you've got to apply dynamic will. There ain't no other way out. We can't kill ourselves about it either. It's just that so cold-hearted and that so pure. But nevertheless, it's loving. We grow up, for the first time we have an adult look at life. It's not dreary, it's very dynamic, because a dynamic will is strength. In Kung Fu you need a dynamic will. Anybody like Kung Fu? Good. Dynamic will is the whole essence of that picture. you are seeing it in manifestation. He knows when to apply consciousness. He knows when to obey and flow with it. And he never strikes first, because the theory behind it, he who strikes first lay his own downfall. And that's your ego, you know. And he who obeys moves with the flow of the wind. Therefore, release is there. So the Chinese always say, bend with the breeze and don't stand up erect and break your roots. Be pliable, dynamic with his pliability. The spiritual person is the most flexible person. He's not rigid, he's not tense, he's not concretized or dogmatic. He's very pliable, and in his pliability, he can demonstrate control for the first time. And that is pure love, that is love without attachments. It's easy to talk about it, but very hard to live it. Why? None of us in his true mind wants to make himself into a scapegoat for other people's benefit. But until you learn how to accept the harassment or the challenge of another human being's behavior on your nature, and don't get ruffled, and merely live through it, you have discovered the secret of the existence. You have inner peace for the first time without working for it. The art of appearing stupid, yet remaining wise inside. That's quite an art. See, the saints always appear to be stupid people. Nobody likes to live around the saint because he's too dogmatic, too emphatic, too down to earth. But they are the ones who know the secret of being at ease with themselves in their simplicity. We have come a long way from the primitive, instinctive life towards the intellectual, experiential life. We are on our way to becoming individually synchronized life. As we individually synchronize our life form with nature and its demands, then we will experience freedom for the control of nature, not freedom from it. Go forth, replenish, and multiply, and have dominion over the universe. That is the law laid down by the divine intelligence. You can't go forth if you don't understand what you've got to do. When you understand what you have to do, then you can go forth and replenish and have dominion. But it didn't say you're going to have ownership. As soon as you get rid of the concept out of your mind that you're going to own this world around you, the quicker you'll have God realization. And the quicker you'll have inner peace. And the more control you will have over your dynamic will. When you lose the concept that you don't own it, everything is set up for you to have control, but not to own. And the control is not dictatorial. The control is the release of your ego from the state of frustration within you. That's self-control. Every time you release that ego from within you, it's like mailing a letter in the mailbox and forgetting about it. miracles begin to happen. Every day we see it all the time. Once we understand the mechanics of how it works, life becomes very simple. For those who associate with us, things is too simple. But we love this simplicity because the essence of living is plain living and high thinking. And plain living is that you can't eat more than one meal at a time, you can't wear more than one suit at a time, you can't sleep in more than one bed at a time, you can't travel in more than one car at a time. See, that's so plain, so down to earthish. And high thinking, treat everybody the same. Don't limit them. Don't limit your fellow man, lest you be limited. That's the secret of success. All the books on success that are being published, if they will only set to the world, treat everybody the same. And don't limit him. You will not have to worry about it. No man is a failure. No man is born a failure. It does not exist in the actuality. It's impossible for any human being to be born a failure. Every human being that is born is a success because he's the only sperm that contacted the ovum to become a human body. And if you want the one sperm that contacted the ovum to become the human body, you'll be gone down the drain with the rest and somebody else will be in your place. So you see, by the law of actuality, you are a winner and not a loser. And stop calling yourself a failure. Yogananda once said, if I had no job in this world, I'd create a job that everybody would want to hire me. I'll be so willing to work that sooner or later they'll hire me all the time. He said, because I'm a winner and not a loser. I was born, and because I was born, that made me a winner. And everybody that was born at the same time or around the same period, they were winners too. And only winners get together. There are no losers. So God Himself is the biggest winner by making a creation. So the man who is afraid to admit to himself that he's alive and acting, don't understand what it's all about. Spirituality is understanding and flexibility. It has nothing to do with churchianity. So true Christianity is not churchianity. True Christianity is a science of the soul. It has nothing to do with Jesus or Krishna or any other religious names. It is that conscious science that operates throughout nature. The word Christos means to attain. It's the intelligence that guides us within ourselves. It's the only manifested intelligence in creation. That's why it's called the only begotten Son, the only manifested light. For centuries, man was searching for himself. And when he discovered it, he was incapable of communicating it. Now, as we are able to understand it from the terms in which we live in and the language relationship, we can use it. The things I do, you do also, and greater things shall you do. And that knocks out the nonsense that Jesus is the only Son of God. If he's the only Son of God, he will say, the things I do, you will do also, and not greater than me. And that's the only man that will set himself up. That would be the true statement, that he's the only Son of God. But he never said. In fact, he never called himself a Son of God. He always called himself the Son of Man. What the disciple called their teacher has nothing to do with what the teacher calls himself. It's the teacher that must be listened to and not the disciple. Because the teacher is the only one who can vouch for who he is. Strange. The disciple can't vouch for a teacher. He's not at that level. He may see many things about the teacher, but he can't vouch for what really goes on inside. It takes a long time, just about before the teacher is ready to leave the body, that disciple may get some inclination as to what that teacher really is. Tomorrow is initiation, and we get up at 5 o'clock for our meditation here. And, everybody seems to be so prompt and marvelous, and taking part in their postures too, getting straightened out. We hope to straighten them out tomorrow with a little fasting and juicing. But we are switching the time for the initiation to 12 o'clock, so as to have an early lunch for those who have to leave on the plane to go back home. So those who are going back to Dallas tomorrow, they may find themselves doing some wonderful seva by carrying one of their spiritual sisters or father back with them to the airport. Anytime you do seva for the Lord, you get a blessing. And I found the sooner you work for the Lord, you don't have to worry about anything. And the sooner I work for myself, I got to worry for everything. So it taught me a lesson a long time ago. You ain't going to get nothing out of this universe working for yourself. You might as well work for the Lord, because He is the only insurance policy that pays off to the beneficiary. And the beneficiary is you. Every other insurance pays off to somebody, you gotta leave it to. If you're working for yourself in God, you're gonna cash in God. And I don't know of anywhere on any insurance policy that will happen. See? If you take out an insurance policy, you gotta leave it to somebody when you die. But if you take out your insurance policy in the actions or service to God, you cash in back.